Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at Mira Nair and her 1991 film Mississippi Masala. Returning on the show today to talk about Mississippi Masala is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
I enjoyed this movie. It was pretty good. It was an interesting setting in a romantic comedy, setting it in just kind of this small town in sort of the middle of nowhere, just kind of this kind of small town in the middle of Mississippi. It's a unique setting in, you know, for movies because they never really go there.
Yeah, and it's also it's interesting and unique because it's a story you don't usually see. Because usually, if you have a story with young people, it's, you know, who they were before they became famous. Every character seems to want to be on, you know, American Idol or achieve mm-hmm. something huge. In fact, the Charles Dutton character does say that he's mm-hmm. tired of waiting around to become famous. But most people have ordinary lives, and that's one of the reasons I really like this film. Is it shows ordinary people with ordinary jobs.
Yeah, and like there's nothing special about what they do, and that's not like an insult to them or their characters or anything. It's they just run this kind of small hotel chain. Denzel Washington is like a carpet cleaner mm-hmm. or something.
But he's
for the
an
hotels.
Entrepreneur too. I mean, he's got his own business, but it's not something, you know, impressive. Like, you know, I'm a movie star mm-hmm. or I'm in a rock band. That's not why you like the character. Mm-hmm. You like him because mm-hmm. you identify with him, or, especially if you've ever been in college and had a, you know, not so great job, which is pretty much everybody in my class.
Doesn't have the job that what's his name in Birdemic has, Rod.
That's
the
true.
Stock option job.
He does not have that job.
But you know, he has a small business. He just kind of he runs a carpet cleaning business, but it's a profitable business. He seems to be earning a living,
mm-hmm.
and he has this goal where he just wants to be by him. He wants to work by himself and not be like what his dad's doing, is still like cleaning tables and dishes and stuff at a restaurant.
And being disrespected. I mean, he's at least his own man, and mm-hmm. he has, you know, done one better, I guess.
And what's interesting about this movie, it's very like a 90s, like a good example of like a 90s and indie cinema film. This feels like, you know, something in the style of like a Jim Jarmusch when I was, mm-hmm. I really thought about that, because Jarmusch films, especially something like Down by Law, like always just kind of just focus on all of these characters around this town and just like, here's this person, let's look at them for a little while. Here's these people, let's look at them for a little while. And just kind of goes all around it. And even another person that's similar, but is like a Spike Lee movie.
Yes.
You know, not only with sort of the racial tension in this film, but just sort of how he always kind of look like, Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. Or even in that movie, he's looking at all these people in this little section of a New York neighborhood. It's just like, once again, she's looking at all these people in this section of a Mississippi small town.
Yeah, it's a little neighborhood that you might never have visited, but you get to see how people talk to each other and how they mm-hmm. treat each other. It's an interesting slice of life. Like I said, it's usually not what you see in the movies. I always like a movie where I feel like I haven't seen it before.
Yeah, you definitely. It's not like two people in a big city fall in love. This is like completely opposite what would you see in something like, you know, a La La Land or
yes.
whatever.
Yeah, it might be the opposite of La La Land.
But even though it takes place in this small town, it still has like a big scope because it just focuses on all these cultures. It's got, you know, Southern Mississippi culture with, you know, not only African Americans, but focuses on white culture. And then you got, you know, Ugandan culture. And like one of the things that interested me is like, I didn't even know there was such a strong population of Indian immigrants in Uganda. Like I had no idea. Like I didn't know there was this big issue with Idi Amin that they didn't like Indians in their country and that they wanted them out, and there was this whole thing where people were refugees and that's how they came to Mississippi in the first place. And I had no idea. I just assumed Indians lived in India, and they never really moved to Uganda.
Well, I believe it was the railroad that brought a lot of Asians into
Which they
Uganda
explained, yeah.
And then everything was fine until Idi Amin decided that they must be the, you know, the cause of all the problems. I like to show this film with The Last King of Scotland to give mm-hmm. like the view of what it, you know, was like in Uganda, and then show some of the people that you see leaving in that scene. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them ended up in Mississippi, of all places.
Of all places.
Of all the places you would choose. Mississippi is so racially challenged. I don't know why anybody would pick Mississippi if they felt like they felt marginalized mm-hmm. somewhere else.
And it's interesting how they show the racial tension. It's not like over the top, mm-hmm. where you have somebody from like the KKK, or they're calling Denzel Washington the N-word or anything.
No, but it's small stuff.
Small stuff. Like
what, it's like his friend continuing to refer to Mina as the Mexican girl when he knows she's not Mexican.
And even, you know, you see one of the guys go, why don't they go back to the reservation where they belong, thinking mm-hmm. that Indians mm-hmm. means, you know, Indian, Native Americans, Indians, not like India. They're from, you know, India.
This is also something Meera Nair has done sort of recently, because she started off with movies about Indians in India, most notably Monsoon. Salaam Bombay, mm-hmm. for which she got a lot of acclaim. But then she started making movies about Indians who had moved someplace else. So mm-hmm. it's like Indians living in different places in America, and you see their struggles with their culture, but it's not in the context of India. It's in relief to whatever she's contrasting it with, like racism in Mississippi. And it's mm-hmm. it's an interesting choice, too, because there was racism back in Uganda, too. There was racism of all kinds of different, you know, how far you are going to compare to decide you're different from somebody.
And it also shows that the racism sort of exists everywhere, and even in places we might not even first consider of, like Uganda. We, you know, like, a lot of people probably didn't know about the whole, like I said, I didn't even know about the whole issue between Native Ugandans and Indian immigrants.
And weren't those scenes from Uganda beautiful?
Oh, everything in this film is beautifully shot.
It really mm-hmm. is. And I liked the story of the two boys who grew up who didn't know anything about racism, but it still catches up with them. You know, mm-hmm. even if you've known somebody your whole life, you can still have that kind of falling out he had with his friend.
I didn't a little bit of clarification. So what exactly happened to his friend? Didn't he get him out, help him escape mm-hmm. the country?
Mm-hmm.
So did the government find out that he was doing that and have him killed?
Yeah, I think that is what happened. The interesting thing about that whole scene, though, is where his friend is telling him Africa is for Africans. Black Africans, because he thinks he's African. Mm-hmm. He's moved from India to be there. He thinks of himself as a Ugandan. His friend tells him, no, you don't belong here. What a thing to hear from somebody that you grew mm-hmm. up with.
Now, do you think, because this is the time he's trying to get him out of the country, do you mm-hmm. think he was like actually sincere in that, or was it more just like, I got to get this guy out of the country or he's going to die, my friend's going to die, and he's just trying to, you know, try to irk him on, just be like, well, we didn't want you here anyway, just get out.
You know, that I had never considered that possibility, but that could very well be the case. I took it as a very daring thing to do, to make every character sort of ambiguous, you know, mm-hmm. where every now and then they say something that makes them seem, you know, really reasonable, and then the next thing out of their mouth is something incredibly racist.
Yeah. Because the whole thing is because he never talks about his friend anymore because he felt betrayed by him, especially when he said that. But then the daughter is like, well, how could you do that? He was your friend mm-hmm. for so many years. So part of me was thinking, like, maybe he just was saying that just to get him out of the country, just to irk him on and not, like, have him try to make him stay, which would get him killed.
Yeah, I guess it would have been a different kind of approach, but it would have been nice to have known that for sure then. Mm-hmm. But maybe keeping it ambiguous makes it more real life. You don't really ever get to know these things all the time.
Yeah, everybody's a little bit black and white. And even with Denzel Washington character, he's not starting that romance with her for the purest of intentions. Mm-hmm. He's more just using her so he can get back at his other girlfriend that's moved on with somebody else, and she's become a big recording star.
And isn't that scene of the picnic just great? Where she comes in and she just sort of, everybody is enamored of her because she is a known entity.
And everybody's asking her questions about everything.
Yes, yes.
It's sort of interesting how in the beginning they're so friendly with her, like, oh, well, have some food. Everybody's nice to her. But the minute that they have a relationship, they're like, oh, God, how could you do this and everything? They completely change their opinion towards each other.
Yeah, both families are very, very have definite ideas of what's accepted. I also like seeing Denzel Washington in a sort of underseen movie.
Yeah, and this was sort of a good talk about Denzel. This was after Glory, which he won the Academy Award, so he wasn't like a complete unknown, but this was still sort of became like Denzel. And this is still, he still has that authority, because the thing is about Denzel is he always just has that authority where, I don't know exactly what his height is, but he always just feels like 7 feet tall.
Like the tallest person in the room, yeah. Yeah, he does have that presence.
And even, because it was funny because last year, they, like every year during the Oscar season, they have this Hollywood Reporter roundtable, and they had it last year with directors. So Denzel was in it with, was he directed Fences last year, and also Mira Nair was in it as well with that on that same roundtable because she was directing Queen of Katwe, and she was talking about how the actress
Sarita Chowdhury.
Yes, Sarita Chowdhury. How this she just casted her out of the blue, out of nowhere, because this was her first ever film, and then Denzel was like, "Oh wow, I really didn't know that."
Yeah, she just sort of casually auditioned and was surprised to get the role, and then after that decided not to go Hollywood, to just focus on independent films.
Yeah, because I recognize, she looks familiar because I've recognized her. She pops up in a few things, like when I used to watch Homeland.
Yes, Mandy Patinkin's wife.
Yeah, she played Saul's wife. And, you know, she was, I forget, I think she was in a couple of the Hunger Games movies. And she's once again those, you know, kind of the hardworking actresses. You'll recognize her face, but maybe not the name.
Yeah, and I really like her in this. I think she is terrific in this. I think she, if this is the first thing she ever did, I think she's very natural.
Very natural, yeah. Nothing seems forced. It doesn't seem like she's trying to overact or anything. No, so kind of was getting some context of what other people thought of the film. I think a lot of people were criticizing her because they thought, well, she was just too flat. She was just always kind of trying to be nice and everything. She wasn't really going out there with emotion. She never emoted enough. I did kind of disagree with that.
I don't know. I thought she was pretty emotional.
Yeah, me too.
Also about Mira Nair, she's actually in this movie. She had a little cameo. She's one of the gossiping biddies on the phone.
Oh, okay. You know, one of the things I think she did really well in this film was the use of mise-en-scene, where just everything she puts in the frame just kind of defines all the characters. Like, in, what was her character's name? Sarita's character's name?
Mina.
In Mina's house, you know, she's got, like, all the pictures of, like, Bob Marley. She's got, like, a Bob Marley t-shirt. And you see all the decorations around all the hotels, you know, the Indian hotels. And everything in the room has this little, just these little touches, these little decorations that really make it stand out and to tell you a little bit about their character. And I really like that movie.
It's really well designed. And one thing that I did want to bring up, because I thought this was very clever, because whenever I tell my students about Bollywood, I say, you know, the music is a huge part of it. And, you know, if at all possible, you must break into dance. And in this movie, this is Mira Nair trying to make a movie that will appeal to Indian audiences and also American audiences. And American audiences are not going to sit back for the song and dance routine. And the Indian audiences are going to wonder where it is.
Yeah,
if it's not in
the
there.
Dance?
So she manages to sneak it in there with them going to a club.
Yeah.
And so you do get to see them dancing together. And I thought that was a really slick way of getting it in there, because if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't even have noticed it. But it's the way she got that in there.
She gets it in there where Americans like, why are we, it wouldn't be like, why are we stopping this movie just for a dance?
Yes.
And it is like, hey, we get our dance.
It's also a way to, you know, show the couple getting closer in Indian movies, because you don't show much sex. Mm-hmm. But it just would seem out of place if it was going to be an American movie. But it makes perfect sense to have them meet in a bar where people are dancing, because that's a very natural way. It's what people do. So that was very clever. She does it again in Monsoon Wedding. She has a scene where they're actually at a wedding. Mm-hmm. So you have to have some music and you have to have some dancing. But it's really, how many times can you, you know, sneak that in there?
Yeah, it feels natural. It doesn't feel
forced.
It
does. Yeah. It feels like part of the story.
Mm-hmm. And another performance in the film I forgot to talk about was Charles S. Dutton, who's actually from Baltimore, so he's getting a little local shout out here. But you know, he plays that character well, because even he has a little bit of prejudice against her, because he keeps on calling her a Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's prejudiced against her, he's still making the creepy little advances towards her that you know, make you feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, and also like his family, his grandfather, who's, you know, half deaf, and they keep telling him, you know, she's from India. And he says, well, yeah, I knew a guy from Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Well, but she doesn't know that guy, because she's from India.
One part I do want to talk about a little bit is one of the flaws I had in the film was, you know, they bring up this character in the beginning of Harry, where, you know, because, you know, trying to be arranged marriage and the culture and everything, and that's going to be the person they're trying to set her up with. So she goes on a date with him, and she just kind of ignores him. She goes and dances with Denzel, and she just stays with Denzel and kind of leaves Harry out to dry. You figure he would, you know, the Harry thing would be a bit more of a factor. He'd get upset, or he would have a fight with her or something, and you never really see anything of him after that.
Well, see, that's because Harry Potter is, you know, a catch. And he doesn't have to chase after anybody. I mean, that's one of the things so hilarious in the biddies on the phone talking, saying, you know, you can be dark and rich, or you can be poor and
light-skinned.
Yeah. But you can't be dark and poor and get Harry Potter. And so they think Harry Potter is all that. She doesn't. I mean, she just goes on the date to make her mother happy.
So it was just more of like...
He's above it all.
Yeah, he can get it. Get somebody
else. Whatever you have, it's not good enough for Harry Potter.
Yeah, and he was like, she should be thankful that I just asked
exactly.
her out.
Exactly.
Okay, now I totally get
it. So he's not going to go running after her or make a scene because he's too good for that.
You know, it was interesting watching this movie. I saw that it has an R rating, and there's nothing about it that much that makes it feel like R rating. It feels like a very soft R. There's a little bit of swearing. I mean, there is a love scene, but you don't really see anything. There's no nudity, and it's just very short.
And again, very cleverly shot, because it feels sensual, but you don't actually see anything. Again, the American audience is thinking, you're dating Denzel. You know, of course you're going to have some sort of physical part to it. To leave it out would be bizarre. But for the Indian audience, to show anymore would just be gross.
It would be shocking. So once again, like you said, she's...
It's a fine line.
Fine line, and she's walking it perfectly, because you're not making it too, like, pornographic or anything with showing breasts or, you know, nudity or anything, but you're also showing that, well, they, you know, it's Denzel, there's going to be some physical intimacy or whatever.
Because, you know, even if he's not supposed to literally be Denzel, I mean, let's face it, he looks just like Denzel.
So what do you think is next for... Mira and Demetrius, because we don't really there it seems that she's going to join him in the carpet cleaning business. I also think that maybe the fam, now that you know that the dad has finally learned the lesson, he's went to Uganda, and he's sort of like, well, this I'm just happy in Mississippi with my family, I don't really need to go back to Uganda.
Right, that's what
I feel like
think.
He'd be more accepting of welcoming him back.
I think the fact that in the end we see him holding a black baby in Uganda means that, you know, I think it was foreshadowing. I mean, that's what I like to think.
Okay.
You know, that's
what
I
like
to think.
I didn't think of that,
actually. Because he's dancing, he's at peace, he accepts the baby in his arms, and then they end the movie. So I thought that's how we were supposed to think that was going to go. Interesting thing about that actor, Roshan Seth, he's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
but
he looks
wasn't
familiar.
The first choice. Ben Kingsley was originally attached to this movie. And then when he backed out, actually a lot of the financing collapsed. And Meera Nair also said that she was she had a lot of pressure to cast white leads in this movie, which she resisted.
Yeah. Well, Ben Kingsley, that'd just be something like, well, what, because he was Gandhi? I mean,
Why did he back out?
I mean, no, why would they choose him first? I think this other guy's better, and you want an actual Indian, not a British guy trying to do an Indian, which he already did like 15 years ago with Gandhi.
I think you cannot go wrong with Ben Kingsley. He's just such he's like Denzel Washington. And if you want somebody to place against Denzel that has the same sort of authoritative screen presence, Ben Kingsley would have made that scene between him and the dad much more...
it would be more even matched.
Yes, yeah. I think so.
And, I guess we could talk a little bit about Meera
Nair.
I know the biggest thing she's best known for probably would be Salaam Bombay.
Yeah, although I don't know. I mean, that was it got a lot of interest and a lot of people talk about it in terms of its artistic value. But I don't know that a lot of people have seen it.
I haven't seen it. This is the only film of hers I've seen.
I think more people have seen Queen of Katwe, which is a wonderful movie. I think more people have seen The Namesake. Also a really good movie. And I think more people have seen Monsoon Wedding.
Okay. And I know she did another film. It was called like The Reluctant Fundamentalist. Have you seen
it? Yes. Actually, I haven't seen it, but apparently I need to look that up on Netflix because it's got a bunch of people in it and a lot of awards.
Riz Ahmed's in it, who was in Nightcrawler and The Night Of and a bunch of things. He's really good.
I have an interesting quote here from Meera Nair worth mentioning just because it's so topical. Because she was insisting on having Final Cut. And they said she said afterwards that they say now in America that Final Cut doesn't mean anything. As Harvey Weinstein just said to some filmmaker, you can have Final Cut. I'll open your film in Arkansas. So So I don't know how much pressure she had to cast white leads and how much that had led to other struggles with getting it released. But anytime you insist on your own way,
you're always going to butt heads with the studios if you have to do things your way. So it was interesting because you talk about, I don't think like nowadays with everybody getting, even if it's a very respectful portrayal, I just don't think if you're like have a cast a white person to do a role with somebody of color, whether they're Indian or any other Asian, any other nationality, people would not like it. Because I think if you're going to do a cast this person as a person of color or minority or whatever, you have to have a person of that race or gender or ethnicity or whatever.
Especially in this day and age, there's so many actors to choose from. There would be no reason not to have the person of the right culture or the deaf person playing the deaf character or or whatever it is.
Yeah, and but was deaf, I think, though Sally Hawkins about Shape of Water. Oh, she wasn't deaf; she was mute. But I thought she played a great performance, and that's playing somebody with a disability.
Yeah, she's actually so good at that kind of fragile character. Yeah, I agree; she was terrific. Although she always could talk. She just didn't.
In the movie?
Yeah, I thought she actually could make noises.
Well, I mean, like speak and talk and sentences and everything. She couldn't do that? She couldn't do that?
I thought
because she was mute meant that she couldn't talk. Because remember, they show the little scar on her neck.
Okay. Oh, maybe I misunderstood what I was watching.
Okay.
Very possible. Well, it's interesting to note that Mira Nair teaches at Columbia University's film department.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she's... let's see, what else? Oh, she was also offered the job of directing Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Oh, that'd be really interesting.
I think so, too. I would have liked to have seen how she would have done that one. She always has such a sense of heart whenever she depicts her characters. Like I always find it very hard to watch the scene where they pull the bus over in Uganda and they make her mother get off and they play her music and they're just humiliating her. And her father wants to stick up for her, but he also doesn't want to get shot on the bus. There's a lot of stuff going on in the movie that is, it passes by really quickly just as to set the scene and let you get the gist of the thing. But when you think about it later, it's like, wow, there was a lot of information given in the movie about how things are.
I was wondering, was part of this film a bit autobiographical for her? Because it seems that not only does she focus a lot on Indian culture, but even with this movie and Queen of Katwe, she also focused a lot on African culture. So did she ever like spend time in somewhere in Uganda? Or
she did spend time in Uganda to research this movie and also Mississippi. And the idea for the movie came from meeting a carpet cleaner named Demetrius in Mississippi. So she sort of wrote it around the character that she saw in this person, this real person. It's interesting that you mentioned Queen of Katwe, because that actually is set in Uganda as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I wonder if she just has an affinity for that area. Maybe she has relatives who lived there and then ended up in the United States.
Yeah, and even with Uganda, it seems that, you know, now that Idi Amin's, you know, way in the past right now, it seems like that this country is making a comeback almost as far as, you know, as far as a
visibility.
Lot of things. Yeah, one of the things we talked a lot about with Professor Dutter was this Wakaliwood, which is this kind of grassroots film production company in Kampala, Uganda, and they make all these kind of goofy, really goofy action movies, and they make them for like very shoestring budgets, like under $1,000, and they're becoming like these sort of kind of cult following. Like they have this movie online, Who Killed Captain Alex, on YouTube for free, and it's got over 1 million views. They're touring all around the globe, I think, with their films and film festivals. They're getting audience awards. They have like a Patreon, we can donate money. And it seems like Ugandan cinema, which I think you look at it, like the first film from Uganda was considered to be made in 2005. So a very, very, very new film industry is booming. And it's really interesting with things like social media and internet and YouTube. It seems like it's growing to be this international phenomenon.
See, I think that's exciting. And they're doing the same thing in Nigeria. They're not waiting around to be able to afford these big, expensive film cameras. You can do so much with a little and still tell a story and entertain people.
It's funny that you mentioned Nigeria, because in all the Ugandan films, they always like say, stay away from Nollywood movies, stay away from them. So anytime like a character is getting beat up or tortured in one of their action movies, they go, this is what happens when you watch Nollywood movies in Uganda.
Now, have you seen a movie called God Loves Uganda?
Mm-mm.
Had a lot of buzz a couple of years ago.
Okay.
But you're right. It does seem to be in the spotlight recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So getting close to my questions here. Anything else that you want to bring up about Mississippi Masala or Mir Nair or anything relevant?
Well, this is part of the Diversity Film Festival.
Okay.
This is the movie that we chose because we wanted to stick something in there that was a little commercial. And what makes a commercial, of course, is Denzel Washington. People looking at that thing, well, I haven't seen that movie. But it also is a nice, I'll be able to use this with The Last King of Scotland in my class and, you know, make that a little more vivid. And it's also because our theme for the Horowitz Center this season is revolution. We were also looking for immigrant, the theme of the film festival's immigrant stories. So we did want to try to look at areas where people immigrated because there was some sort of strife.
Okay. And the whole Idi Amin thing is still becoming relevant because there was recently a movie about the
Radon
Entebbe. I saw the trailer for it and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, so I'll stick that in there as an extra credit when we get to spring semester.
Okay. So the last question we'll have is just tell us a little bit about your classes.
Well, in the spring I am doing, which is starting in a couple of days, Intro to Film, American Cinema, and World Cinema.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing Mir Nair and her 1991 film Mississippi Masala. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaven, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, so what? I'm living in America. You don't like it? Then go back to India.